All right, I want to quickly get through. This is actually the same slideshow, but it's the ending slides. Actually, I got almost all the way through the slideshow. I just don't really have time to finish the whole thing. This ending part, though, I'll go through pretty quickly. I actually meant to show you this the first day and just for some reason didn't. These are tools of biotechnology. So there's various stuff that you'll be working with. I just want to quickly explain what these things are. This is a centrifuge. And a centrifuge is a device that allows for separation. Remember I talked about distillation as a separation technique? That's a separation based on differences in boiling point. Well, centrifugation is a separation technique that separates things based on differences in size. So if you have a liquid mixture that's a mixture of particles of different size, you put them into a centrifuge, which spins it like hell, which creates G-forces. And so it really just speeds up the process of letting it sit there. The higher the spinning, the higher the G-force, and therefore the heaviest particles will be forced to the bottom of the tubes, and the lighter ones will float on top of that. What results when you take it out is that a centrifuge tube will have a little pellet at the bottom of all the heaviest stuff, a solid pellet. That thing is called a pellet, or it's called the precipitate. Precipitate is a noun when you pronounce it like that, but precipitate, the verb, means to fall, which is why rain is called precipitation. And why a cliff that you can fall off of is called a precipice. Anyway, the precipitate is the heaviest stuff in that mixture. All the stuff that floats above that precipitate is called the supernatant, which most people, even biologists or other scientists, mispronounce as supernatant. It really is supernatant, though. All right, that's what a centrifuge does, and we'll be using those. Not today, but actually, we have this. These little plastic round things are centrifuges. What the hell's wrong with my... I have to go to manual mode. Next is a vortexer. And you have these sitting out as well. These blue things. A vortexer is a way of mixing something in a tube. They just, once you have them plugged in, when you push on them, this thing just spins. And so it causes a little vortex or a little tornado-like thing inside the tube. Mixes it well. We're going to be using various kinds of tubes, not only test tubes, like those glass ones shown, but also microcentrifuge tubes, which are what these little plastic ones with lids are called. They're also called Eppendorf tubes, but that doesn't matter what their name is. They're tubes of various sorts to contain various things that we're using. Pretty straightforward. And tubes are put into racks of various sorts. So just use racks properly so that you're not ever spilling anything, basically. Next are gel trays. We don't have these sitting out today, but we will be using these. Gel trays hold what are called electrophoresis gels. The procedure that is conducted within one of these gel trays is called electrophoresis. And electrophoresis is yet another separation technique. Electrophoresis separates things based on their charge, their electrical charge, and on their size and shape as well. And the way this works is that you produce a little gel, just like a little gelatin block, like a Knox blocks or whatever, jello shot. That's called the electrophoresis gel, and it has little depressions in it called wells, right here. These are wells. And you put in a mixture of stuff that you're trying to separate into the wells. And then you put the whole gel into the gel tray, and notice it has electrodes. You hook that up to a power supply, give it a voltage, in other words. So there's an electrical voltage applied along the length of the gel. And if those particles that are in your mixture are charged themselves, not all things are, but you only use in this technique things that you know are charged, then the negatively charged particles are going to move toward the positive electrode, because opposites attract, and vice versa. This works well, for instance, for DNA. DNA, no matter what it's from, any kind of organism that has DNA, all DNA is negatively charged. And therefore, if you know you're working with DNA, you put it in the end that is by the negative electrode, because it's going to move toward the positive electrode when you give it the juice, when you give it the voltage. But things that are moving through this, even though they're all negatively charged, it's a collection of different sized pieces of DNA, for instance, if you're using DNA. And therefore, the smallest pieces will most easily make it through this thick gel. And therefore, if you run this experiment for a while, after a certain amount of time, the smallest pieces will have moved the farthest. The largest pieces will have dragged behind. So it's like a race. They all start out at the start line, and they move at different speeds, and therefore they separate from each other into things that we can see as bands. So when you see images like this on... It's always used as stock footage in news, for instance. You know, they show people working with test tubes and stuff. They show these things, too. These are electrophoresis gels. We'll do that a little later. Oh, yeah. Forgot this doesn't work anymore. And just a couple more left before we do what we're going to do today laboratory-wise. Power supplies are simply that. They supply the power for electrophoresis gels or for whatever else we're doing, but we'll only be using them for electrophoresis. And that brings up pipettes. Pipettes are used to transfer liquids. And they're used to transfer those liquids accurately. So if you're going to be working with liquids and you want a certain volume of liquid to be transferred from one container to another, which you often do, then you use pipettes to do that. And that's why there are graduations, are marks on these pipettes. Now notice that pipettes in general, which come in a variety of sizes, but in general pipettes are narrow and long. Why does that make sense for transferring a liquid accurately? Well, why did you say? Yeah, that's part of it.
Easier to pour, easier to read the measurements of smaller amounts.
Yeah, that's the thing I was getting at. The drops part is about delivering it. But if you need to make sure that you are withdrawing a certain volume accurately, then you need something that's narrow. By analogy, if I were to say, if you were cooking, and I say, I need a cup of water, you're not going to use a cookie sheet, right? A cup of water in a cookie sheet, the cookie sheet will hold it if it's one that, you know, not just a sheet, actually. The ones that have a little wall, tiny little walls, that's going to spread out. You can't, you know, with a very wide container, a given volume isn't going to make it rise very much vertically. If you put that same volume, though, in a tiny tube that's narrow, a small change in the volume is going to have a drastic change in how high it goes up in that vessel, right? That's why pipettes are narrow, so that you can accurately measure a volume that is small. And pipettes are operated different ways, and they come in different sizes, but they are all used for transferring liquids. Sometimes you have to transfer a very tiny volume of liquid, and that's what we're going to be doing today, actually. That's why sitting out in these racks, these green things, are called micropipetters. They are a type of pipetter. A pipetter is a device that actually operates a pipette. Okay? So the pipettes I showed you in the previous slide those are connected to some sort of pipetter. You should never use your mouth. Stupidly, people used to do that a long time ago with chemicals. But now we always use a pipetter. You don't ever draw it up like a straw. You could. You just don't want to do that. So if you're using one of these fairly large pipettes, you connect it to either one of these plastic pipetters, which we have in the lab, or one of these rubber ones. They work the same way. They suck it up, basically, to a certain tick mark on the pipette that you're interested in. Then you take it somewhere else and you spill it out. But if it's very tiny amounts, then we don't even use these little tubes. We use just tiny tips on what we call micropipetters, shown in the upper left right here. That's what you have sitting out in these little racks with the plungers on them. Those are micropipetters, and instead of using actually pipettes, you use micropipetter tips or pipette tips. And the thing about a micropipetter is that you can adjust it to whatever volume you need to withdraw. And there are different micropipetters with different ranges, and it will suck up exactly that volume and let you spill it somewhere else. Very highly accurate. Damn it. I'm going to have to fix this. Is that the last one? No. We also have heat blocks. Heat blocks are just pieces of metal that can accept tubes, so they act like little racks. But they are connected to a heater, a controlled heater that you can set with a thermostat. So you can make a solution, and if it has to react at a certain temperature, you can keep it on a heat block for however long. And it's nice and controlled. Okay, that's the end of the slideshow, but I just want to say a couple things about what you're doing today for your activity. So everyone should get out the book. And what are we doing today? We're doing the pipetting, but what?
2.2.
So that is page 42.
And 29 has the how-to.
Yeah, 29 has the how-to. Keep in mind, throughout the semester, you need to keep an eye on your syllabus to know what you're doing for the laboratory portion each time. In other words, what activity or activities from the book. Read ahead on the activities so that you aren't just totally lost when I set you loose to work as groups. What I'm talking about is this: is the page or pages in each activity that come before the actual protocol. Protocol is your step-by-step recipe format that you need to follow in order to do the exercise. And it's a pretty simple exercise today, but it's important. Today's exercise is important because you need to be able to operate these micropipetters well in order to do the more important exercises that requires use of the micropipetters. So today, if you make mistakes with micropipetting, no big deal. But when the volumes actually really matter in later on, you won't make so many mistakes if you have some practice. But anyway, what I'm saying is no matter what the activity is, read that first part first, that kind of background information, before you come in. Today I'm going to really just test how well you can follow instructions, which is actually sometimes disappointing, I have to admit. A lot of people do not like to read things carefully and follow the instructions. But it's important to be able to do that. That's why I'm going to let you do that pretty much on your own today. But I do want to say one thing about the micropipetters. When you're using these, it's a pretty simple device, really. There are different ranges, first of all, different micropipetters. This one on the top says 100 at the top. And then there's a bar, a divided by sign, and it says 1,000 microliters. That thing that looks like a U, by the way, is a Greek mu, M-U. Mu is a Greek M, which is why it's used to stand for micro in the metric system. We use a Greek one instead of a normal M because a normal M is already used to stand for milli. So there are milliliters and there are microliters. Microliter is a millionth of a liter. So it's a tiny amount. You know, do you have a feel for what a liter is? A 2-liter bottle, half of that is a liter. A millionth of that is a microliter, and that's the volumes that you're going to be sucking up with these things. But each one is different. There's, I think, 3 levels. Anyway, notice that on this face of it is a little gauge that when you twist the knob will make that, and you can also twist it down here, will make that display change. Well, what the display means depends on which type you're using. This one is 100 to 1,000 microliters. What other ranges do we have? 2 to 20 and 20 to 200. So the 2 to 20, this is the smallest one, the most highly accurate one, but you only use it under certain circumstances, right? You wouldn't want to use this if you have to transfer a lot because you'd have to do it many times. This only goes up to 20 microliters. Notice that it has a 3-digit thing, though. 2 are black and one is red. The 2 black ones are before the decimal point. The red one is 1/10. So if you need to dial in 3 microliters, you would put it in as 030. In other words, 3.0. Everyone understand that? But confusingly, when you get to the big boy, the 100 to 1,000, this doesn't have as much resolution. You can't dial in individual microliters or tenths of microliters. So even though it does go up to 1,000, there's still only 3 digits in its display. That last digit, the bottom one, is tens of microliters. All right? The middle one is hundreds, and the top one is thousands. So full open, the biggest gulp this can take would be 100, which means 1,000, because the ones place is not even shown here. Does that make sense? If you had to put in 550 microliters in here, it would be 055. Which is really 0550. Okay? So don't be confused by that. That's one thing I want to say. And the other thing before I let you loose in here, not to go, to do the stuff, is that when you plunge these things, notice by doing it, go ahead and actually do it, that there's a place where the plunger stops, although if you try hard enough, you can go through that stop. Okay? So it has a natural stop, and then you can go a little bit beyond that. That's really important, because once you have it dialed into exactly how much you want to withdraw, that's only going to withdraw, the micropipetter is only going to withdraw that amount if you first plunge it down just to that first stop. Now, this one doesn't have a tip on it yet, and you don't grab tips out of the little boxes with your hands and put them on. You just open the lid, because these are clean tips, and put this thing onto the tip, and it'll take the tip out. Keep everything as clean as possible. Also, wear gloves while you're doing this, once I stop talking. But anyway, you set the dial, you push it, you have a tip on it, you push it down to just the stop, then you put that under the liquid, submerge it, and just let go. That's going to suck up exactly what you dialed in. Okay. Then you take it wherever you're going to deliver it to another container, and that's where you actually go the entire way. If you go just to the stop, not all of it is going to come out. You'll have a little bit left. This forces that little last drop out. But if you force it down all the way and then suck it up, you're going to suck up more than what you actually intended. That's the important thing. Okay, go ahead and work as groups of 4 and play around with these things. You have stuff sitting out that you need.